Apple's new phones have more recycled parts than ever before. Will that change the rest of the industry? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech, demystifying the digital economy. I'm Molly Wood. New smartphones come out like clockwork every year. Most people buy new phones every 2 years. But that upgrade cycle is terrible for the earth. Smartphones are energy intensive to manufacture and involve mining dozens of different rare earth minerals. And very few parts of the phone can be recycled because actually extracting those metals is also difficult and energy intensive. But last week, Apple announced it's cracked part of that nut. It found a supplier that's already got recycled rare earth materials, and Apple is now putting those into its newest iPhones. The company said it's a first in the industry. Lisa Jackson is Apple's Vice President of Environment, Policy, and Social Initiatives.
The rare earths in the Taptic Engine are exactly about a quarter of all the rare earths that are in other parts of the phone. So we still have work to do, but now that we've identified this source, I think one of the big pieces of work will be to scale and to ensure that they have enough used material coming in so that they can give us the quantities that we need. So it really is a matter of making this market all the way from getting used material in and then recycling it and then getting it back into our products.
Well, and then I want to ask you about the counter argument, which is that even if these devices become contain more recyclable material, they're still resource intensive and energy intensive to make, even the recycling itself. And there's a new phone announced every year. You know, like, what is the tension between kind of the upgrade cycle and the sustainability?
Yeah, our customers decide their upgrade cycle. And what we're really proud of is that we have always made devices where part of what you get when you get an Apple device is one that's designed to last. Apple devices are designed, for example, to have free software upgrades that go back many, many, many years and make your device like new just by upgrading the software. And sometimes, you know, replacing the battery if necessary. So if you can keep that device in use for a long time, if you can pass it on, if you can decide that there's other uses for it, that's the best thing for the planet.
Well, yeah, I mean, I have to push back a little bit there and say that, you know, these devices have historically been difficult to repair or upgrade yourself. I have a 2013 MacBook Air that I love and I'm clinging to for dear life, but I can't upgrade the components because they're soldered to the motherboard. And so people have historically felt that they need to buy new products more often. Do you see some of that changing? Do you see repairability factoring in here?
Yeah, I think our devices have become more repairable over time. I think one of the tensions in durability is that soldering and how components are fastened have a big impact on their durability, whether that MacBook Air still works after you drop it. Maybe you don't drop yours, but I drop mine pretty often. So I do think that we have to look at both the repairability and the durability, and Apple designs its devices to have both. We've also, I think, made some wonderful improvements over the years in making repair through our authorized service program much more available. And now we have our new repair program that we just announced where it makes it easy for people who are trained, who sign up for free training, to register and get access to Apple parts, which has been something we've heard from many folks who are in the repair field.
What are the constraints? Like, certainly, there are always going to be constraints between making consumer devices that you want people to buy and sustainability efforts, even if that's a, you know, short-term financial loss on the road to longer-term sustainability. And so I wonder, you know, what do you run into? What are the things that are hardest to overcome?
I think it's recognizing what this field is about and realizing that innovation is what the technology sector, what this field, what the iPhone, what the Mac is about. So how do you not hold back the innovations that actually have powered this entire market and power entire sectors? And I think what we have to do is from the very beginning, think about ways to lower our impact on the environment and have both. I mean, one of the things that I really believe is that the best products in the world have to be best for the world, that customers should feel really proud of the fact that Apple has been consistently lowering its overall corporate footprint over the last many years, and it went down again this year. The fact that last year we announced that we run this company on 100% renewable energy. Over the past year, we've doubled the number of our suppliers to 44 who've agreed to run their Apple operations on renewable energy. So over 5 gigawatts of new energy coming on the grid around the world in the manufacturing sector, which many of us believe is the hardest one to decarbonize, and which we're working right now hand in hand, side by side with many of our suppliers to decarbonize.
How are you approaching the kind of technology transfer of some of this? You know, a big question is sort of there's leading by example, and then there's really sort of pushing the industry forward. Where do you think Apple sits on that timeline?
Our intention with the recycled material program is to make it one where we share technologies that we find and innovate as we have them. We don't have any desire to go into the recycling business, but we'd love to see more recyclers who have capability to do what we call specialty recycling, things like rare earth recycling or cobalt recycling. We'd love to see those become profitable and big enough to service the entire sector. So we're just at the beginning of the kind of innovations we'll need. So in the beginning, we're not ready to share innovations, but we have, and it's actually a little bit of a joke around Apple that unlike Apple, who famously likes to guard its innovations on the product side, we've written white papers, we go out to speak at conferences, we work with governments, especially in Europe where there's a real focus on this idea of a circular economy, on reuse and remanufacturing. We want to be a resource there.
And so is that how you help build that market? Do you think you show that it works? You know, buy from suppliers who then have money to continue their research, who can then sell to other manufacturers?
Yeah, it's a virtuous cycle. It helps when you have regulatory agencies that are trying to push that virtuous cycle. And so as a former regulator, I will never, ever believe that the private sector can do it alone or without the right pushes and the right guardrails. But first, somebody has to prove it can be done. You know, most of our U.S. environmental laws are based on a technology demonstration. So you can't get clean air from auto emissions without a catalytic converter. So, you know, once the catalytic converter is available, though, you can require that cars burn cleaner. You know, the obvious example today with California and its wonderful clean car program, so many of the innovations that have become almost standard around the world started by technology advances that were engineers recognizing that there was a regulatory need, there was an air quality need, there was a health need, and frankly, there was a marketplace. And so we hope to start the marketplace, and I'd love to see governments, you know, recognize the art of the possible here and maybe think about ways to bring recycling along so that we have the recycling of the future just when we're having products of the future at the same time.
There are still going to be those who say, fundamentally, consumerism is the driver of so much waste and so much of the things that are negatively impacting the climate. And like, would it help if Apple said, it's okay, you don't need a new phone and a tablet and a watch and a laptop and AirPods? Like, is there a message that could reduce our consumption?
I hope is the message that I gave myself on stage last year. Last September, I was up on stage and I said that a product that lasts a long time, I think in that case I said iPhone, is the best thing that you can do for the planet. So I'm wondering if your question is more whether consumers ask themselves that question or whether Apple should stop the innovations that drive our world. I think that's a better question.
And then let's talk about you for a minute. You were the EPA director during the Obama administration. And I know that there are a lot of former Obama administration officials in the tech sector now. And I wonder why you made this move. Why did you move to the private sector?
You know, I'm a chemical engineer by training. I have my master's in engineering. And I worked for EPA and in the public sector almost my entire career. I started as a staff level engineer and I ended up as administrator. I can't think of any higher honor in public service. My dad was a mailman, and I used to tell the story of, you know, public service was in my blood, and I feel really proud of that work. And when it was time to move on, I actually cannot think of another company I would have gone to work for. But what really impressed me was the CEO, Tim Cook, who I'd met a few times when we spoke after I left, you know, made it really clear that making a mark on the planet in a positive way was one of the core values that he saw and one of the things he thought Apple could do that maybe only Apple could do, partly because of our scale and partly because of our knack for innovation. And it just, you know, it sparked the engineer in me. I wanted to come somewhere where the I had done all the policy innovating I could do, but we talked a lot when I was at EPA that you can't make progress if the technology isn't there to allow you to. So to be able to come here and show that you can run a company this large on 100% renewable energy, to show that you can and that we have an obligation to help our suppliers get there as well, to show that if we do nothing, the recycling of electronic products will not end up in a closed loop cycle. It won't mean making products from recycled and renewable material. And so we will continue to deplete resources. And while we're not there yet, I feel 100% certain that we can get there. And so I think I'm right where I'm supposed to be. I feel like I didn't lose a minute of impact.
Lisa Jackson is Apple's Vice President of Environment, Policy, and Social Initiatives. Back in 2017, Apple said its goal was to eventually make all its products from 100% recycled materials. Experts said this latest news is indeed a big deal, both for Apple and in terms of creating a market for rare earth recycling. And now for some related links. Over on our website, marketplacetech.org, you'll find a link to a Reuters story about Apple's rare earth recycling, and it has a little more detail on the part of the problem that Apple hasn't solved. That is, how to efficiently remove rare earth minerals from old phones. I mentioned that Apple is getting already recycled rare earth material from an outside supplier, which it hasn't named. Lisa Jackson told Reuters that the recycled rare earths are coming from material that's generated during manufacturing and not from minerals that have been recovered from old smartphones or laptops or things like that. And that is an important distinction because right now scientists and Apple are still trying to figure out how to get materials out of old devices and then reuse them in a way that makes financial sense. There's a good piece at Gizmodo from earlier this year that explains all of that. And then on top of all that, less than 20% of smartphones are recycled. Many are thrown away. Many more just sit around people's houses in drawers. And now this isn't to throw cold water completely. If there is a way to use recycled materials in phones, that is incentive to create a market for those materials in the first place. And that speeds up the incentive for entrepreneuring science types to make it more economical. And all of that is why it's so important to create this market in the first place. And before we go, a little related audio, speaking of entrepreneurs. Producer Stephanie Hughes was at the United Nations General Assembly Climate Action Summit on Monday, and one of the speakers there was Anurag Saha Roy. He's a young entrepreneur who won a competition sponsored by the UN to come up with an innovation that addresses climate change in some way. He created a platform to let farmers get better access to high-quality weather updates to make them more resilient to the changing climate. And he also delivered a plea on behalf of entrepreneurs building climate tech everywhere.
Entrepreneurship and technological innovation, these are going to be the two major pillars if you are to build climate resilient systems, if you are to fight climate change without relying solely on government policy. Which is why it is important that the governments involve and incentivize the youth. And they bring out the innovators, they bring out the entrepreneurs, and we do the best that we can to bridge the digital divide. Like we already know, the technology is on the side of the youth, but not everybody has access to it. And the ones who don't have access to it are the ones most affected by climate change, the ones most vulnerable to the world. Now, my message to the leaders out here today, my message as a young entrepreneur, is that we are expecting support. We have had enough of action plans, enough of policies, enough of statements, commitments. What we need right now is we need active support. And by active support, what we mean is that we entrepreneurs, when we start a company, we need tax breaks. We need you to support us by streamlining processes. Starting a business is so difficult right now. Why? We need ease of doing business. We need startup grants. And this is what the youth are expecting. These young people, they're risking their careers, they're risking their stable jobs, all to build solutions that can save the planet Earth. And as the leaders of the world, the least that you guys can do is provide them with a conducive platform, a platform that helps them scale their solutions. And I don't think there's a lot to ask, right? That's the least that you can do. And when you are here today, we are here today to support the youth and innovation and entrepreneurship. So let's come together and ensure that we do all that we can to support these young kids, I'm one of them, to build solutions that can save the world.
You tell them, Anurag. I'm Molly Wood, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM. Marketplace Tech helps you stay sharp on all things related to technology and the economy. And to help you do some numbers of your own, you can get your very own Marketplace Pencil Pack when you donate today. It's a set of six pencils, each stamped with a different Marketplace quote, yours for just $5 a month. Support public service journalism and get your pencil pack today at marketplace.org. And thanks.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.